You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
It's the Here District. Started off with Taps. Man, oh man, I'm the host, the melancholy host, melancholy Marcus Johnson, and my first mate, the forlorn first mate, Chris Johnson.
What's up, man?
We are the Fantastic Voyage. We are the Here District. We are saddened today by what we witnessed in game four. But we are excited to have us joined by Nikias Duncan, co-host of the podcast, The Dunker Spot. Appreciate you, The Dunker Spot.
Yes, sir.
I'm reading here, the J.J. Redick Network 342 Productions, or maybe that was a couple of years ago. Nikias, welcome to Here District, brother. Good to have you.
Hey, and it's an honor to be here. I'm excited. Unfortunately, we're starting with some bad news, but excited to talk Bucks basketball. Also have some big shoes to fill. You had Steve on not too long ago.
Yeah.
So going to try to hold it down for the Dunkers.
Okay, well, I'm going to light my Basher Johnson candle here in honor of Dame Lillard and just, you know, and the
Bucks. What is the candle? What is the candle supposed to signify?
Well, you know, just morning, hope. I don't know.
How about hope?
This is a candle. This is my mother passed away a couple years back, Nikias, and so my third son Joshua had this candle made up, and so whenever I want some inspiration, some hope, man, just to feel good, I light that candle. And you know, just kind of meditated on it. So, and that's kind of where we are today, man. Jump into it, Nikias. Dame Lillard, your feelings when it happened? Just your thoughts on the whole situation.
Steve and I were hosting a watch party as we do during the playoffs, and so Dame goes down. And my general thought whenever I see a player fall, you know, tough shot at the rim, whatever the case may be, is ooh, I hope he's all right. Because sometimes it is something. Other times it's we're gonna linger because I did a foul call. And they're just back up and it's fine. And I'm looking at the chat react to it. And it's like, oh, no, that didn't look good. Oh, no. I'm just like, well, I need to see a replay then if this is this bad. And then you see it's non-contact. I'm just like, no, not Dame. Not anyone, but not Dame, considering it's miraculous that he's even playing right now, considering the blood clot issue. So for him to work back the way that he has and to relatively hold his own since he's been back, to have him go down like that, it was just disheartening. I just really felt for him. I felt for the Bucks fans who were – incredible crowd during these two home games. And so for them, the life to kind of leave the building a little bit when they see Dame walk, it was tough. It was really unfortunate.
Chris?
Yeah, I mean, it sucked. I mean, it's one of those things where, MJ, you know, I've been around a lot of those injuries. We've been around a lot of those injuries, the ones that happen when no one's kind of around you. You just land and you start hopping on one leg. My worst fears sort of were that it was something very serious, as Chris Haynes reported when I first saw it. And the thought went to, like, damn, like, this is terrible. This is, like, the worst stroke of luck, the worst fortune you can get, a guy that worked his butt off to get back on the floor from just this incredibly ridiculous blood clot injury. And then this happens. It was just sad, man. It was just sad to see a guy like Dame have to go through that, you know, and at this stage of his career, as Nikias had said, I mean, it's like, man, you know, you just start thinking, like, what's next? And trying to focus on the series, but then it's like, you know, so much coming at you. Sensory overload right now.
Yeah. And so for me, you know, as you mentioned, Chris, I've been around a few guys that have had Achilles injuries. And as of this taping, we don't know that for certain at this point, but it's kind of what it looks like. And so Norm Nixon, Alton Lister, former teammates of mine with Golden State and with the Clippers. And the one thing that happens is Nikias points out that it's a non-contact kind of who kicked me. They feel this pop in the back of their ankle. It's like, who kicked me? Somebody kicked me.
Nobody around.
And nobody's within 40 feet of the player when they have that sensation. And so that's the first thing that crossed my mind. But then also, I had a chance to holler at Dame before the game, right before he went out to get his pregame shoot in. And I told him, game three, he was 2 for 12, Nikias, missed 7 of 8 of his three-point shots. But he had the best defensive rating of all five starters. He played lockdown defense on Neesmith when he's matched up against Halliburton, did a good job against him, keeping him going to his left, keeping him rejecting screens. The Pacers had 71 pick and rolls. The game before that, they had 89. And that's a playoff high tie with Cleveland. So, but that's it gives you an idea how well the Bucks were adhering to the game plan. And Dame was a big part of that, man. Dame was a big part of that. And so, and I told him, man, look, watching you play defense the last game, game three, was as much fun as I've had watching you as a Milwaukee Buck. And that's the big shooting games and the great halves and the 35-point half against the Pacers in game one, all that. Just because of the circumstances, the totality of everything he's been through to come back and struggle the way he struggled and to still contribute. To still contribute, to defer to Gary Trent, let him be the shooting star of the game, but also get out there and get something done. 2 blocks and 2 steals. Dame hasn't had that in, you know, 5, 6 years in a playoff game. It's been a long time since he had that combination. It doesn't seem like much, but for a guy, 6'3", who's an offensive-minded player, it's a major contribution. So, so with all that, In context of what was going through my mind, just the emotion. And what do you think, guys, in terms of the team, could you see the drop-off emotionally for this team? Can you point to that? Look, the Pacers would have been a tough out in game four anyway. They're playing great basketball. Rick Carlisle, his staff, they do an outstanding job. But what do you think about that, Nikias? You think that – how much of an impact? Let me ask. I know it had an impact. How much of an impact do you think it had on the outcome of the game?
I say a moderate impact just because of the shot making that we got from Indiana in that game four is pretty much a flip from what we saw in game three for them. And so the issues were more Milwaukee defense than Milwaukee offense from first watch at the very least. And so not having Dame out there, again, you feel him because of that kind of talent, but even through the lens of trying to set your half court defense, getting the ball in the basket a little bit more so you can get back and kind of set up. Not having Dame there, you didn't have to go back to Ryan Rollins, who had been out of the rotation for a little bit. It made it a little bit more difficult for them to string together scores. And as you know, if Indiana is able to get going, forcing turnovers, or they're just running off of misses, they'll run off of makes too. But if they're able to kind of build that kind of consistency and transition, it can just become an avalanche really quickly.
That's a funny question. How much impact did it – did I see a drop-off or did it impact the game? Well, I think I did see a drop-off.
Doc, he played Brook. He's playing Brook about 15 minutes the last couple of games. He threw out that one lineup in the fourth quarter or late third. I think fourth quarter with Brook and Jericho Sims. It was a it was a really unusual kind of a – when I saw them checking in at the scores table, I was like, that's an unusual grouping right there that you very rarely see. But again, it's the pasta theory. You're just trying to – Pat Connaughton was on the floor at the same time. I mean, you're just trying to come up with something to see if anything works. But I'm with you guys. I mean, the only thing that maybe could have saved a game like that, if Dame had one of those nights where he's just electric, and he didn't start out that way. By the time he went down with the injury, he was 0 for 2. And it, as you talked about, to be out with the thrombosis, the blood clots in the leg, he's out for a month, and then played, 37 minutes the first game, played a lot. And he's been playing a lot of minutes. And so you've got to wonder how much legs he had to carry a team offensively on his back for even a half, you know. And so, but again, give the Pacers credit, man. They have done a tremendous job. They've got a female coach, Jenny Buchek, I think is how you pronounce your last name. If anybody knows different, please let me know. But Jenny Buchek, former WNBA player, former WNBA coach with the Monarchs and the Storm. But now she, from what I understand, is the one that's responsible for the defense. And I thought that they did a really great job against Giannis last night. We'll look at that more down the line. But the Pacers aren't known as a defensive team. You know, and but yet, you know, with Miles Turner's 7'4" wingspan, I mean, they made things tough. I mean, everybody talked about Gary Trent Jr. like he was going to have a repeat performance in game three. But I kept saying, look, they'll make an adjustment. They'll stick to him like glue, change what they were doing from game three to four. And he's not going to be You're not gonna catch lightning in a bottle twice and have this huge scoring game because of how they make that adjustment. But Nikias, what do you see out there in terms of adjustments from the Pacers?
I think they were able to do, as simple as it sounds, it feels like they did what they normally do better. Like they are a team that full court's pressure. They're going to get you deeper in the clock. They want to try to turn you over. Against Giannis, if he's getting any catches in the mid post, we want to send a double. And if you have a shooter that we don't care about, it makes it a little bit easier for us to send those doubles. I think the rotations were there. And so it just feels like Indiana was able to kind of get back to their basics. And to your point about them not being known as a defensive team, it's probably time for them to start being known as a defensive team. They have been a top 10 defense in the calendar year of 2025 off the base of that full court pressure. They can throw different guys at you. See Aaron Nesmith on the guard. You'll see Andrew Nembhard, who just flies around everywhere. I feel like he's been parked at the nail this entire series, just kind of wrecking havoc. And so when you have that kind of speed and that kind of tenacity up top, you have Miles Turner on the back end, as you mentioned, Pascal Siakam as a roamer or someone that can switch on to some of these bigger forwards or can just take the Giannis assignment and kind of lead him where you want him to go defensively. It kind of plays into what Indiana wants to do. And again, if they're able to force quick shots or funnel shots to guys that you don't want taking them or they're forcing turnovers, they just get to get out and run. And they just put and keep an immense amount of strain on you.
And Nikias, in a situation like this with the Bucks down 3-1 facing elimination, if you're Doc Rivers, how do you approach your lineup next game? Do you go with the KPJ, Gary Trent, AJ Green, Giannis, Bobby Portis starting, or is it something that you look at? I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
You're going to want more of that lineup on the floor. I don't know if you start that way. I think one of my frustrations in this series, and you alluded to Brook Lopez a little bit earlier, and Marcus alluded to the minute count. I think this is a tough defensive series for him, naturally, just because of the speed the Indiana plays with. Like, we've mostly seen Brook in a drop outside of that game, too, when Milwaukee decided, hey, let's just switch everything. And mixed results, we will put it that way, in the interest of time. But I think if you're going to have Brook in a tough situation defensively, if you're not going to get A-plus Brook on defense, you at least have to make it worth it on the other end to kind of offset what you may be losing on that end. And the fact that we are now four games into the series and we have gotten two Brook Lopez post-ups through four games is insane to me. They both came in game three. They opened the third quarter with a post-up. I think Andrew Nembhard came with a double. Kyle Kuzma gets a cut. 5 minutes later, it's more post-hub work for Brook Lopez, but they toss it to him into the block. It's Gary Trent Jr. setting the screen for Giannis after he makes the entry pass. Gary Trent Jr. pops up, draws a foul on three-point shot, and they just don't go to it again. And I don't understand why there isn't more Brook. Like, it can't just be Brook as a spacer. That is part of the value. That can't be the entire boat for him. And now that you have Damian Lillard out for the rest of the series, I would imagine, you have to get more Brook Lopez usage. Because otherwise, it is Giannis who has been easily the best player in the series and arguably the entire postseason. But he can't do this by himself.
Right.
I think putting that much shot creation burden on a KPJ, whether he starts or come off the bench, on Bobby Portis, who has mostly been tremendous offensively in the series, you need someone else. And I think Brook Lopez gives you an avenue to get more offense, take a little bit of pressure off of Giannis. Honestly, you know, alluding to that second play where Gary Trent Jr. gets the three and gets fouled on it, that's a different way to unlock Giannis if you're just tossing it into Brook Lopez and getting to some split actions or just getting him off the ball and getting someone to screen for him. Like, there are different ways you can move him around, get Brook more involved, so you can offset some of the difficulties that he's having on the other end.
We affectionately refer to him as New Jersey Turnpike Brook from his net days when he was a force in the post. And under Coach Budenholzer, I remember he got him away from post-ups one season, and then the next year his post frequency almost doubled, like 10, 11, 12% of his possessions that next year. Doc, I thought, had done a pretty good job of this year mixing in, you know, a requisite amount of post-ups for Brook. But for you to say he's had two post-ups so far in this series, it's just baffling to me because it's such a weapon. He can still, you know, consume a smaller defender, smother him. He's got a great touch inside. He's really, really adept at drawing fouls inside, of finding contact, and, you know, going through a player's arms and getting to the free throw line. And But I guess that will have to be something that the coaching staff will really take a good hard look at, because if you got to play him, as you mentioned, I mean, he knocked down a couple of threes last night. He'd been shooting, didn't score the game three, but knocked down a couple of threes. But you can get more out of him, and with this post up game, he's still got it. It's not like it's gone anywhere. Even though he's 36, 37 years old, been around forever, but I mean, he's still real comfortable back to the basket and scoring and finding ways to produce points. So definitely something to look at.
If you're not going to use Brook offensively, why not go with Jericho Sims, who has a positive net rating when he's on the floor defensively, who gives you a different look on the defensive end from a rim protection standpoint, an athleticism standpoint, a pick and roll standpoint. I get the offensive side of things, but you're not using Brook. So, Nikias, my question to you is, like, what are your thoughts on more Jericho if they're not going to use Brook this way on offense?
I think within the we're not going to use Brook context, I see the argument for it. My worry for Jericho, and this is someone that I've generally enjoyed going back to the Knicks days, he's just a bouncy fella. It's very fun. Yeah. I think my worry with that would be, what does his defense look like with extended minutes? What does it look like with the up and down of the game where Tyrese Halliburton now has a better beat on how Jericho leads with that top foot when he switches? And now you're getting into some of the drives, and now Tyrese is spraying it out, and now you're getting into some of the recovery stuff, and now we're in the zone. Now we're in the foul zone with Jericho Sims. Mm-hmm. And now now you're looking at Brook like, hey, big fella, can you come save us? And it's like, well, this is what I'm here for. So that would be my worry. But like, to your point, like there is a vertical presence that he has. Mm-hmm. That could potentially pop, especially if you're going to empty a side for Jericho. And I guess that'd be the other problem. What does the pick and roll with Jericho Sims look like now with no Damian Lillard? Because in theory, even this version of Dame, where he wasn't making the shots that he normally does, he's still getting Miles Turner at the level.
Right.
He's still getting Thomas Bryant at the level. Mm-hmm. If it's now Ryan Rollins, is that just drop now? Or is this just a switch now? We're just going to flatten this out. And Jericho Sims, he's not a guy that's going to punish you on the block against mismatches. He can get you on the offensive glass. So like, maybe that's where you find your edges there. So still an avenue for it to work. But those would be some of my immediate questions that I would have if you're going to go to, we're going Jericho over Brook.
With no Dame now, kind of segueing into this conversation, because I'm curious, how much are the Bucks going to lean on Giannis as a playmaker using, you know, with Dame's gravity not out there, his ability to do what he can do off the bounce. Now, how much can the Bucks integrate Giannis next game, short roll passer or out up top, breaking down and then spraying with surrounding him with shooters on the floor? How much of that do you expect to see?
I think at a very basic level, we're going to see more inverted stuff with Giannis, if I had to guess. Like, I think that's been one of my favorite mini battles of this series. When they've tried to invert things for Giannis, hey, let's get Torian Prince as a screener. Let's get AJ Green as a screener. Let's try to get Tyrese Halliburton in action. And the Pacers have largely responded with, hey, that's cool. You are going this way. I am getting out of here early. It's not just show and recover. I am running up and I am forcing you to the side where my defender is sliding so we can maintain these matchups. And one of the things that I enjoyed in, I want to say, the game three, there was a possession I ended up tweeting about where they tried to set up an inverted pick and roll with Giannis and AJ Green, knowing that this is how Indiana was going to play it. So AJ Green just slips it instead of trying to set the screen, gets to the left wing. Bobby Portis, who started the possession on the left dunker spot, just subtly moves to the right side of the floor. And that creates a 2v1 in the corner that Obi Toppin had to try to navigate, couldn't get there. And it's 3 points on the board for Milwaukee. So I do wonder, do we get more slips out of that to try to poke at? Because I don't think Indiana's going to bend the coverage until they absolutely hammer it. So I think they test that a little bit more. Again, as we've seen through the first four games of this series, if Giannis gets a touch on the block, it is just going to be a double team. So that just becomes space the floor correctly around these doubles. And beyond that, knock down the open shots that you get. We saw what Gary Trent Jr. could do in that game three. Getting shot making off of those doubles, I think, would help. The 4-5 pick and rolls have been switched most of the series. Giannis has had a lot of fun against Miles Turner. So we're going to see more of Giannis with the ball in his hands. I think there's going to be more pick and roll for Giannis. And then from there, you just need your shooters to knock down shots when he gets doubled.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that inverted screen, because one thing that I noticed, especially not so much last game or in game three, but between Tyrese and TJ McConnell, whenever AJ would come up to set that screen, they would almost leave AJ and go and blitz Giannis on the side that they knew AJ was going to continue off of. And my thought process is like, why doesn't he double back and just find that space on the floor from the side that he came from? Because that defender is like overcommitting, to the left side of the floor. You know, if it's McConnell, if it's Tyrese Halliburton, then AJ slips right into where the defense is. Man, if he would just kind of, and I know footwork wise, it may be a little bit more challenging to get your feet set, kind of coming back the same direction you came from as opposed to following your momentum. But it's little adjustments like that, that especially AJ, because he doesn't need a whole lot of room to get that shot off. And hopefully those are the reads that that he'll make. But I agree with both you guys. Giannis, the one thing Doc had talked about is empowerment. And this is what I want to get you guys' take on this also. That triumvirate that I called him at the end of the season, the 8-0 April, between A.J. Green, Gary Trent Jr., and KPJ, Kevin Porter Jr., going along with Giannis, and then once Bobby came back, I mean, their net rating was like plus 42. I mean, they were just off the charts in terms of how productive they were. All of a sudden, the playoffs get here. I mean, there's a reason why there's such a discrepancy between role players and superstars, right? I mean, you know, and not to, I'm not knocking these guys, but mm-hmm. but you know, I almost, in my hope of hopes, I almost expected a kind of a seamless transition into the postseason of that same effectiveness. But man, is it the fact that the team has got so much more time to prep and to really game plan for what these guys do well? I mean, Kevin Porter Jr., they had, every time he would decel, as Chris likes to call it, decel in the paint, Miles Turner's big 7'4 wingspan was just like a pterodactyl, just, okay, decel this. And just all on, and now he's throwing it off. You know, he's just really had him uncomfortable. And so, again, Jenny Buchek, the defensive coordinator, I mean, the Pacers staff, I mean, you know, I don't know. But to me, a lot of it is just, you know, there's a reason why Dame is a top 75 player and these guys aren't. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just a different context. And I think for that lineup in particular, I think they're still winning their minutes in this series. It's just certainly not as drastic as it was in the regular season. I mean, you have two darn near historic comebacks in those minutes. That's going to juice the numbers a little bit. But the fact that they can make that run kind of speaks to how well it can work. But I think it's a high variance deal with the perimeter guys in general. Like Gary Trent Jr. can get to those one or two dribble pull-ups, but he's not someone that's going to break your defense down. Right. AJ Green is comfortable bombing away, but he's not self-creating like that. KPJ does not mind taking on high on-ball usage, but as we've seen in Houston, as we saw in LA, he hasn't always been the most efficient guy. It's a very boom or bust style. And then with Bobby Portis, as good as he's been, it feels like he's been the one guy that hasn't been doubled on post-ups so far in this series. Indiana is mostly fine with him operating within a vacuum. So if anything dries up with those guys offensively, you get to, okay, what exactly are we getting to now? What stress are we putting on Indiana's defense? How are we getting right here?
Hey, no, but to your point, Nikias, about the stress that the Bucks are putting on Indiana's defense, in the series, the Bucks are averaging, what, 251 passes a game? Or I think that might have been the season. Whatever it is, Indiana's up at about 317 passes a game, which is like first in the league. Can the Bucks beat the Pacers continuing to play sort of an ISO-heavy type of offense?
It's going to be tough. Like, I think it would have to be a lot of not just Giannis scoring, but a lot of Giannis foul drawing. Like, I think they have to bring the pace to where it has to feel like a Bucks game. Not that the Bucks aren't comfortable getting out in transition, but it has to be more of a half court style for them. And I think that's part of why Milwaukee went to more switching from game two onward. Like, let's flatten this out. Mm. Let's see if we can make them work deeper into the clock. To Indiana's credit, they did that and still generated good looks. But that's part of the calculus. Can we flatten them out? Can we slow them down on the other end? Can we feed Giannis, draw two, and kind of play out of that, but do so at our tempo? And so, like, yeah, there's an avenue to do so. And again, like, if KPJ isn't going to get doubled, like, he does have the ability to win one-on-ones. AJ Green can knock down contested shots. Gary Trent Jr. can knock down contested shots. It isn't a process that I am personally fond of, but like in a literal sense, yes, they can do it. They just don't have much wiggle room. If either of those guys aren't going, or if Indiana's just dinging them, we're hitting the drop, we're hitting your switches. When you go to the zone, we are finding immediate answers. You just don't have many pathways beyond that, would be my concern.
And it doesn't help that the Pacers are shooting 57% on shots with less than 4 seconds on the clock in the playoffs. I mean, they're making those shots. Yeah, they're getting ran down, and then they're knocking down those daggers.
And that's the issue, because I just looked it up on Cleaning the Glass. I mean, in terms of percentage of plays in the half court, the Pacers are running more half court stuff than the Bucks. The Pacers are the team we think about in terms of just pushing it up and down the court, getting across midcourt in 22 seconds, blah, blah, blah. But 86%, 85.7% of their of their plays are half court plays. And that's like the 20th percentile because, you know, this values transition. And mm-hmm. so, but they're scoring. And here's the problem you just talked about, Chris. They're in the 97th percentile, you know, 127 points basically per 100 possessions. And, you know, what? I don't know. So defensively, a lot of that was against the zone. And you had Siakam, back screen, slip, pick apart. You know, a lot of picking apart going, Obi Toppin threes, Aaron Nesmith wide open corner threes. I'm talking about, I don't know. I mean, that's the part that was frustrating for me watching, just the amount of open shots. And this is a Pacer team, 0.927 points per 100 possessions, a 27th percentile against zones. All season long, they'd struggle. But, man, they're just feasting on this Bucks zone defense.
And Nikias, what do you think? Like, what's the issue with that 2-3, with the Bucks 2-3? It worked. It kind of worked a little bit in the first couple games, but then they had all the answers last game. What do you see out there?
I think to borrow from my guy Steve, it's a failure to stay matched up, and ultimately the recovery phase gets them. Yeah. Once Indiana is able to distort it, they aren't good at closing out and containing. They may run you off the line, but now you're funneling a guy inside the paint, and if you're disheveled on the other end, here's a dump off or here's a flash to the middle for a short jumper. Aaron Nesmith got one of those, I want to say, in game three that I'm thinking of off the top of my head, and that's where he gets it. Like Indiana, as you mentioned, has been very, very boom or bust against the zone this year. There have been games where they just lit up to, like, they lit up the Miami Heat zone. I'm thinking of a regular season matchup when in the Heat's vaunted matchup, weird zone that they run. It was like, oh, yeah. No, we can just throw that is fine.
Yeah.
But then you also have, hey, the Pacers were up 18. They are now losing this game because they got hit with zone and they act like they've never seen it before. But no, they've done a really good job of spacing it out. It's very funny watching them like bring the ball up the left side of the floor. You look at the right side, two guys are cutting at the same time to kind of relocate to different spots and they're flowing to the action from there. Let's screen the top edge on the right side, and then they're just in the middle. It's like, wait, how did they get there that quickly? Yeah. So I want to give Indiana more credit than like slam the Bucks for defense, but I do think staying matched up and in the recovery phase from there is kind of where they're getting dinged.
All right, we're going to segue into about that action. We're going to take a look at some videos right now. And one thing I want to look at first is Pacers offense. Look, Miles Turner was abysmal in game three, had his worst shooting night as a playoff performer. But look at how they kind of focus on the free throw line area, running back again. So now Brook Lopez is going to spin around and drop all his momentum, taking him to the basket and just kind of underscores your point, Chris, about Brook's effectiveness defensively. I mean, it's a good effort there, but right here, the big fella's going to take a slip. But this was an area that the Pacers attacked over and over again. The free throw line, they're just real comfortable with that mid-range shot because they've got the players to do it despite what, you know, the analytics gurus might think. This is a good shot for the Pacers because they make such a high volume of those.
But I love what Nikai said about the recovery phase. Yeah. Watch Brook as he drops back. Now watch his recovery. He slips. He slips and falls in the recovery phase. That's not going to cut it.
That's not going to do it. I would say, one, for a pro Pacers note, this has been a really good screening series for Miles Turner. So off rip, like seeing Brook Lopez try to prepare for this pick and roll, and Miles is just like, hey, how about I screen you then? That's fine. if I can't get the Gary, let me just screen you and see what you guys got to do for it. So, like, yeah. I enjoyed that portion of the program. The other thing is going to be the spacing. Miles Turner certainly enjoys mid-range jumpers, probably going back to the pre-Carlisle days with this shot here. But Pascal Siakam starting on the left side of the floor, that entire right wing is clear for Miles Turner. He has all of the space in the world. They're setting this pick and roll high, and then he just has all the space in the world to roll into. You got Aaron Nesmith in the right corner. Pascal's kind of going from left short corner to relocating to the right dunker, but they're keeping that wing clear, and that just puts even more strain on Brook Lopez. They don't want to pre-rotate Dame there. So to the recovery phase point, it's solely on Brook at this point if they're not going to late switch this.
Yeah,
and you know, as we saw in game three and four, like they didn't really want to switch Brook onto Tyrese.
They're real comfortable. It's like, and they've been doing this all series, getting right to the nail and pull. You know, and being real comfortable taking that shot. Bucks defensively, that's a shot contested that their coaching staff will tell you. It's a bullcrap shot that, you know, will make them make a high volume of those to beat us in terms of the math. You know, three being more dangerous than two. But, man, these guys, I mean, they're good at this. And you got Brook again, Chris, is to your point, going into drop, going away from the action. All of a sudden, he's got to try and stop and reverse his course. And, he's just dead to rights.
But something I see on the pick and roll, I love to hear Nikias' thoughts on this. If you watch Brooks' initial movement, he actually goes towards the sideline. I don't know if the call or the miscommunication, like watching, you see where Brooks goes? He throws the man and goes towards the sideline instead of picking up the ball, which gives Nebhard that extra right there, that space to go ahead and knock it in. What did you see on that PNR, Nikias?
I think to directly answer your question first, I kind of wonder if Brook expected to be some help one pass away. And that's where I think Tyree's getting out of there and kind of removing Kyle Kuzma makes it a little bit more difficult. So as Brook opens up, that is just a lot more space. But I will once again say, look at the beginning of possession. Watch what Pascal Siakam does. Left wing, let's clear it out.
Yeah.
And so you just have all that driving space for Andrew Nembhard if he wants to get there. Also, I think there was a screen that got Kyle Kuzma off of Andrew Nembhard to start, if I'm not mistaken. And so the fact that Miles stepped immediately into this is interesting to me because Indiana loves their flare screens and the Bucks have struggled with that in this series so far. But yeah, I think Pascal Cutting, that gives more room for Andrew Nembhard. Again, Tyrese Haliburton just kind of taking Kyle Kuzma with him. No help being there as Brook opens up. Nembhard just gets to the left hand pretty much unimpeded and can get to a comfortable shot that he's really good at.
And to your point, Chris, the Bucks are supposed to ice side pick and roll.
I was going to ask
Where the Pacers, this is not really a, you know, this is more the flair, the Portland, that Portland line they used to talk about back in the old days. This is a little bit of an adjustment by Rick Carlisle and his offensive people.
Of where they're starting it?
They set the screen. The screen is not really a side, you know, it's close to the sideline.
Like so the Brook 45?
Brook is trying to scurry over into ice position. He's thinking he's got to protect the baseline on that drive going right by Nembhard. It goes right. He goes right, and Nembhard reads it beautifully, gets him beat to the middle, gets him to open up those hips.
That's so easy.
And it's dead. But just that little nuanced adjustment where the pick is being set, I think was able to confuse the defense of the Bucks. So, yeah. Yeah, that's a great adjustment by the Pacers. Because you think you're going to ice it, you know, blue is what the Bucks call it. Keep it down. Keep it pinned on the sideline. But all of a sudden, Gary Trent is like, well, this is not really the sideline, so I'm not supposed to, you know, change.
Yeah, that's where it was.
Yeah. So, that was a problem. We're going to take a look at some of the early defense on Giannis. And here was one of the adjustments in terms of not sending a double team early and just allowing Miles Turner and his 7'4 wingspan. He's been a top five shot blocker like the past, five out of 7 years or seven out of nine, something crazy. But he was just kind of that spy, as they call it in football. He just roaming, waiting to help from the weak side. And I think that got Giannis frustrated. Giannis 3-for-10 in the first half from the field. But they did a really good job. Pascal Siakam kind of gave up, you know, his offensive energy to really focus on defending Giannis man-to-man. And I just thought it was a really good adjustment that it once again gave Giannis a little bit of a different look. And, you know, change this rhythm up a little bit, Nikias.
Yeah, I think as we talked about a little bit earlier, Indiana had been willing earlier in the series to just switch those 4 or 5 pick and rolls and just kind of let Miles deal with Giannis in space. This time we get a deep under from Pascal Siakam. And then as you mentioned, Miles Turner just roaming off of Brook Lopez, kind of daring Giannis, who is a really good passer. If you're going to hit Brook Lopez, you're going to have to do it with your left and it's going to be across your body. And that just allows, you know, that you can dare Andrew Nembhard if you want to. That just feels like that could be a pick six there. But I like the under from Pascal, and that's a tremendous play from Miles Turner.
Yeah.
And to your point, Nikias, on that left-handed pass to Brook, wouldn't it have helped Giannis a little bit if Brook would have relocated a little bit more into Giannis's vision, or should he have stayed right there on that angle? What do you think when you're watching it? What do you see?
Based on where Gary Trent Jr. and Dame are spaced, I don't think Brook could have got there. The only way he could have went is to his left, and that would have made it a more difficult pass for Giannis. So I think if one of those guys would have, even with how it's going, with how quickly Giannis attacks, there isn't a place for Gary. Like, Gary could go to the dunker if he wants.
Yeah.
But, like, that's
tough.
I think that feels more good Indiana defense more than anything Brook
could have. Well, and that spacing, as you're talking about it, you got three guys just sitting on that weak side and just no place for anybody to go over there. So now the next play, they've done a masterful job again of mixing things up. I mean, here he's going to attack. He's going to miss. Now, again,
Haliburton early, right? Or who's that? McConnell on the drive? Right here. Watch it. You see him? Who's that? 26.
Ben Shepherd. Ben Shepherd. Yeah. Ben Shepherd. Yeah. Ben Shepherd. But against Siakam, I thought, you know, he did his job. He just made things difficult. He met him, you know, enough and gave him enough of obstruction to not make things easy. And, you know, when you get into Giannis's head, you see these kinds of shots not fall in as efficiently as when he's really Giannis in terms of playing with more confidence and playing with more assurance about what's open and what's there. This is kind of one of those shots from him where he's not sure where Miles Turner is. He's kind of looking over his shoulder. He knows he's lurking someplace, and I got to get it up quick before he can. I got to get up before he can get there and overlays it. So Nekai,
yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I generally like the early attack from Giannis. That's where you can kind of get him downhill before Indiana is able to fully build a wall around that free throw line. I will give the quick shout to Ben Shepherd for hustling to get down to that nail area so Giannis couldn't set up a spin. And so he kind of has to go to his right hand. That makes the job a little bit easier for Pascal Siakam. And absorbing the blow, showing the hands, getting the contest without a foul is generally good stuff. That's still a makeable shot for Giannis.
Yeah.
But it is good stuff from Indiana kind of dictating terms like, okay, we can't build this wall. You're going to get downhill. At the very least, you can only go this way. And you can only go with this type of finish if we can help it.
Yeah. And Ben Shepherd, man, remember last year in the playoff series against the Bucks, Benedict Mathurin wasn't available with the shoulder injury. And Ben Shepherd played some really, really solid basketball. I mean, I like this young man in terms of having a glut at his position. You know, if I'm a general manager around the league and he's available just because of the minutes crunch playing behind Mathurin and some of these other guys, I'd love to have him on my team. He's tough,
legit.
He's strong. You know, he's a really, really solid basketball player.
Solid piece.
This is more Giannis, defending Giannis at the elbow now. Here's that kind of that early ball.
But let's see Halliburton. You see Halliburton just sitting. Just sit watching. He gets here. Boom. Sitting.
Now, does Giannis need to look to kick that over to Gary Trent? Or is Giannis, again, has he been baited into, you know, trying to do too much on his own without trusting and empowering his teammates? I mean, what are you seeing here, Nekai?
It feels like I wish I could see how much time was on the clock on this, because it felt like a very quick shot for Giannis on that front. Mm-hmm. But he's gotten a lot more comfortable with that mid-range shot. I think this is the most efficient mid-range year he's had in his career so far.
Yeah.
So he certainly doesn't mind this one. You mentioned Tyrese Halliburton. I would also shout out Miles Turner, creeping off the strong side to provide a little bit of presence there. So if Giannis wanted to drive to his right, he's seeing the crowd. That is a pass they can make to Bobby. But Miles is there. So you get the help one pass away from Tyrese Halliburton. The kick to Gary is there. And so, like, benefit of hindsight, Pug had just made that. Let's see if Tyrese can close out and contest without fouling. But, again, showing a crowd for Indiana. Giannis went for the shot that he's comfortable with, couldn't get it to go. But that help was there for Indiana.
All right. That's enough Pacer defense. Let's take a quick look at some Kevin Porter Jr. offense. And I say this because he's going to have to – we're going to have to see a lot of this on Tuesday night, game five in Indiana for the Bucks to even have a chance. And, I mean, while we're watching KPJ, what do you guys think about the Bucks' chances to force a game six in Milwaukee on Friday coming up Tuesday night? I know that's a loaded question, but I got to ask it anyway. Did the Bucks have a chance in hell to pull this thing out?
I think they have a chance. It is when you have the best player on the floor in Giannis, you're always going to have a chance. And if you get to shot making there, and if you're able to hold serve enough defensively, that's a lot of ifs. But it is possible. They have won a game in the series with that format. We knock down our threes. We punish the double teams. We do well enough defensively. We throw in enough different looks to where Indiana at least has to think a little bit. And Indiana doesn't make their shots either. So in a literal sense, they can do so. To the clip itself, KPJ is going to be a big part of that offensively, but it also takes me back to the conversation we had a little bit earlier about some of the non-Giannis creators. This is a knife drive and finish from KPJ, but look at the coverage. That's a deep under. We're not putting two on the ball against you. You're just going to have to score, and you're going to have to score enough to make us do something different. And so he's going to have to win his one-on-ones. He's capable of doing so, but that's a very quick example of, ooh, nobody else really makes Indiana – like, you don't see extra flooding in the paint on this drive or anything. It's just we go under. We're staying attached to Giannis. Andrew Nimhard Aaron Nesmith doesn't even really give, like, a swipe at the nail or anything like that. He's just worrying about Giannis not getting the ball again. This is what you're going to see, I think, in game five. He just has to punish it.
Chris, any chance the Pacers come out a little complacent, knowing that they've got, you know, so many games to win one, you know, three games to win one?
You know, if it was any normal kind of matchup, but I think there's so much bad blood, and I think there's so much stuff, you know, beneath the surface with the Pacers that these guys are going in for the kill. There's no question about it. They're going to be ready. They're going to come out hyped. It's going to be at home. The crowd's going to be bananas. So, like, everything is going to be going against the Bucks' favor. The Bucks are going to have to come up with an unbelievable effort on both sides, man. The defensive side of things, the recovery, the challenging, the help, like, they're going to have to, like, just all – everything has to come together all at once for them to win this game. If not, you know, it's going to – you know, season's over for me.
Yeah, going to be tough. And let's take a quick look at this last KPJ. I mean, a nice little floater. I mean, and again, I like the fact that he has finally found a little rhythm offensively and has found where his shots are. He's not over-penetrating, trying to take it all the way into the shot blockers. But you know, the probability is low, but there's still a possibility. And that's why you got to go out here and just kind of take it to the Pacers. And you're going to need this guy. What a beautiful crossover left to right against Siakam. Go ahead.
I want to know from Nikias, who do you think the Bucks, like, as far as minutes, who should get more minutes to give them the best chance to win, KPJ or Ryan Rollins?
That's actually a good question. I think because you don't have – I'd imagine Doc is going to trust – the answer is probably both, honestly. I think just the minutes are just going to be there, so we're going to see more Ryan Rollins. I think he's going to rely more on KPJ just because of high variance the scoring is. And as you see on this clip here, you mentioned the crossover. Once again, this is just 2-on-2. Pick and roll coverage. We turn this into a late switch. KPJ gets downhill. He's not really seeing help. He can win those opportunities. And so I think Doc is probably going to lean more KPJ in terms of who's going to get more of a minutes bump. It's probably KPJ.
Yeah.
I'm also curious to see how much the Pacers will change the scheme and making it more hands, more bodies instead of these ISO 2-on-2, you know, possessions on one side. Like, are they going to change and scheme for this now that they know KPJ is going to be having the rock for most of the game?
I think there's room to do so. If for no other reason, then, hey, let's test out KPJ as the playmaker. Like, he is someone that is a lot more comfortable with interior reads than he is with kickouts. And so if we're kind of able to bait, like, again, you saw Andrew Nembhard, the possession before that one was kind of the nail, gave a little swipe on that empty side pick and roll. Like, hey, if you want to get into the cat and mouse game with Andrew Nembhard, have some fun with that if you would like. Andrew Nembhard is an incredible defender. So, like, maybe we see a little bit more activity there. But if I'm Indiana, no, let's just keep this flattened out. Like, if you're going to win, you're going to win with these one-on-ones. You're going to win these one-on-ones against size at the paint. We want to minimize the kickouts that you do have available to you. Because once you get into a playoff game, even outside of just Bucks Pacers, in general, if you're down a man, you're going to try to find edges and try to find variance wherever you can. And the easiest way to do that offensively is we're going to take more three-pointers than you.
Yeah.
And if Indiana's – and in this situation, if I'm Indiana, no, let's make KPJ knock down these pull-ups and these floaters. We don't want to give up threes and get another Gary Trent Jr. game or an A.J. Green game or a Torian Prince game, as he has not had that. A Kyle Kuzma game, we haven't seen that either. So I would anticipate Indiana just keeps this straight up. We'll send help to Giannis, but everybody else, you just got to beat us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's why we play the games. We'll find out kind of what happens. And a couple of things, a couple of takeaways for me that you've talked about, Nikias, that I really, really kind of glom onto, and that's you got the best player on the floor in Giannis. In a situation like this, it's going to take a massive effort on his part. But also Doc Rivers. It's funny. He's been on the other end of these 3-1 situations. Mm-hmm. How much of a benefit is that going to be in terms of getting this team ready to play, getting this team prepared to come out? And I mean, the things look bleak. Trust me, after Dame goes down, you get blown out at home in game 4. So the darkest before the dawn. I mean, things are really bleak. It looked really, really dark around 5-serve Forum. But – you know, best player on the floor. You got capable enough players around him if they have their best game ever type situations. And if Indiana comes out a little complacent, which I don't expect to happen to a large degree, but just enough, you never know. And so this is going to be an interesting watch to see what kind of narrative we come away with. If it's just a done deal and season's over, if all of a sudden the Bucks, as Jesse Jackson might say, keep hope alive and force the game, say, keep hope alive. We gotta keep hope alive. Listen, the Kaius Duncan, man, the dunker spot. We appreciate you coming on, man. Please come back and join us, man. We love to have this intelligent basketball insight, man, that you guys like you bring to the program. And
Yes, sir. Been a real pleasure.
Real joy to have you on the show. Thank you.
I appreciate it. It's been an honor. Like, you've had Steve and I both on, so we got to get the home of home going at some point. We got to get y'all on the dunker spot. We got to get this going. But no, I really appreciate it. I had a blast.
All right, man. Take care. All right. That's here, District. Bucks trying to get it done.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.